today we're going to talk a bit about the challenge of being human and Christian, the flesh and the spirit. And Jesus even says this, for the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. That's from Matthew 26:41. And he's talking to his disciples, who he just simply asked to stay awake and keep watch. And three times he comes back and these guys are just passed out. And we're going to get into that a little bit. As we go into the story today of Jesus' arrest and trial, we're going to look at some reactions, except that the responses are totally human, and hopefully gain some knowledge that will help us to overcome adversity and life with some nuggets from Jesus. So we're going to level set on a couple things in regard to our humanness. Now, my disclaimer is I am nowhere near an expert in defense mechanisms or psychology, but we're going to cover just a couple of those concepts at a very elementary level that Pastor Tosh understands so she can put out there. So we all have defense mechanisms. That's part of our humanness. It's part of what keeps us alive. It's part of what keeps us going. Just a couple examples. Denial is probably one of the top ones, according to Uncle Google and my research over the past week. We also have projection, regression, and a bunch of other shuns, to name a couple. So I want to cover a couple of those because we see these reactions within the disciples and Pontius Pilate as we go through Jesus' trial and arrest. So denial is, at a very elementary level, refusing to experience something or ignoring reality or the consequences of a situation. Regression is a movement back in psychological time. So you see this a lot with little kids when they get a new sibling. Like a four-year-old will start sucking their thumb or kind of going back to some of their former because they see the babies getting a lot more attention, so they kind of regress a little bit. And projection, one of my all-time favorites, is pushing your own unacceptable thoughts and feelings or behaviors on another person. So what you're feeling, you're like, oh, well, you're sad today. You know, I'm actually happy, but... And so you're pushing your own emotions off on somebody else and accusing them of something that you're actually dealing with. You just don't want to deal with it, so you're going to push it off. The purpose of defense mechanisms is to help us decrease stress and protect us from anxiety. They are great in the moment. These things are not bad things. But they can become unhealthy when they become long-term, or you're using some of them in situations that maybe it worked when you were two. Like when I was two or three, I was probably perfect, but I also probably threw some temper tantrums. I'm just guessing. At two or three, a temper tantrum is acceptable. I'm just learning my words, figuring out how to use them, gaining my autonomy. I don't know really what's going on. So I'm going to throw temper tantrums. As I get older, thrashing on the floor, throwing my fists up and screaming, probably now that I'm in my 40s, is probably not the best thing. Like if Jamie gets to pick the meal that night and I don't, it's probably not the best way to deal with things, right? So there's a moment and there's a time, and there's certain points in time in your life where your behavior, as we grow our human development, that things are appropriate, and then there's things where they're not. Sometimes with these defense mechanisms, though, they worked in that situation, so now I'm going to make it a habit, and they're going to work in all situations, but they don't. So the last thing we're going to talk about is fight or flight. That's a really good one, too, right? Like, it's awesome when a foreign object all of a sudden gets thrown at you. You didn't get hit in the head with something. It's not so great when you need to have maybe a tough conversation with somebody that you're struggling with, and like, we really need to talk about this. There's something between us. Yep. That's probably not the way to handle that one, right? That's one where you need to probably stand in and fight and not avoid it like a flying object. And fight or flight, it occurs naturally as our sympathetic nervous system, and that's as far as I'll take that. You can look that up. Our sympathetic nervous system kicks in and it pushes us to either stand and fight or to flee. It's activated in response to feeling threatened, pushing the body to fight or flight. It's reactive. And again, great in the moment, but not long term, like we just kind of talked about. So as we go through, you're going to see Peter's denying. Pontius Pilate is pushing off accountability. And all of a sudden, the disciples, after Jesus is arrested, where are they? They all fled. There's a lot of humanness within these stories. We're just going to touch on a couple. But it is really fun to go back through Matthew 26 and 27 and not to step out of the judgment of how could Peter deny? How could Pontius be a leader and know it's the wrong thing, but just wash his hands of it? How could the disciples, hearing Jesus clearly say, I'm going to rise from the dead, I'll see you in Galilee. Why did they flee? Why didn't they just go to the rendezvous point and prayerfully wait in hope and anticipation of Jesus showing up? Their humanness kicked in. And Jesus called it. He even told Peter, you're going to deny me. He's like, oh, no, I'll stand and fight and die for you. Then his humanness kicked in. It's okay, because we're human. But I don't know about everybody here, but me, I want to kind of grow and I want to be able to overcome those things. And I want to learn more about myself with that. And then how does that come into play within my Christianity and my belief in Jesus? And the belief that Jesus Christ strengthens me and I can do everything in his name. So we're going to focus on Pontius, Peter, and the disciples. And so we'll turn to the scriptures I'm going to read for a little bit. There's a lot of scriptures here. I'm going to bounce around just a little bit and just give you a little bit of the story here and there. So bear with me there. So we're going to start in Matthew 26, verse 31. And this is after the Last Supper. And so it's between the Last Supper and going to the Garden of Gethsemane. On the way to Gethsemane, Jesus told them, tonight all of you will desert me, for the scriptures say, God will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised from the dead, I will go ahead of you to Galilee and meet you there. Peter declared, even if everyone else deserts you, I will never desert you. Jesus replied, I tell you the truth, Peter. This very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny three times that you even know me. No, Peter insisted, even if I die with you, I will never deny you. And all the other disciples vowed the same. That's humanness right there, right? We're quick to commit to something. This year is going to be different. I'm not going to eat ice cream every day. I am going to start exercising. I'm going to break those habits. We're really good at saying stuff. Follow through. Follow through sometimes gets tricky. So then what takes place after that is they go to the garden. Judas comes. He does his betraying with a kiss. And then it moves into the arrest. They go to Caiaphas, the lead priests, and they're trying to figure out how to trap Jesus. And then we flip over to verse 69 there. So Jesus, as he goes into, as he's led through the city into Caiaphas, Peter, he fled, but he's not too far behind. He keeps kind of following the action. And so he's just outside of Caiaphas' area. And Jesus is in there getting questioned and getting beaten and all those terrible things. But this is Peter outside. So he's been watching his leader go through. 69. Meanwhile, Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard. A servant girl came over and said to him, you were one of those with Jesus, the Galilean. But Peter denied it in front of everyone. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Later, out by the gate, another servant girl noticed him and said to those standing around, this is the man with Jesus of Nazareth. Again, Peter denied it, this time with an oath. I don't even know the man, he said. A little later, some other bystanders came over to Peter and said, "You must be one of them. We can tell by your Galilean accent." Peter swore, "A curse on me if I'm lying. I don't know the man." And immediately the rooster crowed. Suddenly, Jesus' words flashed through Peter's mind. "Before the rooster crows, you will deny three times that you even know me." And he went away, weeping bitterly. So then they get Jesus to Pilate. In between there, you have the story of Judas, who all of a sudden feels remorse for what he's done. And he takes another human action of taking his own life, which is for a different time. So we go to the trial before Pilate, picking up Matthew 27:11. "Now Jesus was standing before Pilate, the Roman governor. 'Are you the king of the Jews?' the governor asked him. Jesus replied, 'You have said it.' But when the leading priests and the elders made their accusations against him, Jesus remained silent. 'Don't you hear all these charges they are bringing against you?' Pilate demanded. But Jesus made no response to any of the charges, much to the governor's surprise. Now it was the governor's custom each year during the Passover celebration to release one prisoner to the crowd, anyone they wanted. This year there was a notorious prisoner named by the name of Barabbas. At the crowds gathered before Pilate's house that morning, he asked them, 'Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called the Messiah?' He knew very well that the religious leaders had arrested Jesus out of envy." That's parenthetically there. "Jesus then, as Pilate was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent him a message. 'Leave that innocent man alone. I suffered through a terrible nightmare about him last night.' Meanwhile, the leading priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas to be released and for Jesus to be put to death. So the governor asked again, 'Which of these two do you want me to release to you?' The crowd shouted back, 'Barabbas!' Pilate responded, 'Then what should I do with Jesus, who you called the Messiah?' They shouted back, 'Crucify him.' 'Why?' Pilate demanded. 'What crime has he committed?' But the mob roared even louder, 'Crucify him.' Pilate saw that he wasn't getting anywhere and that a riot was developing. So he sent for a bowl of water and literally washed his hands of accountability and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, 'I am innocent of this man's blood. The responsibility is yours.' And all the people yelled back, 'We will take responsibility for his death, we and our children.' So Pilate released Barabbas to them. He ordered Jesus flogged with a lead-tipped whip, then turned him over to the Roman soldiers to be crucified." Peter's watching from a distance, unable to cope with the moment. He moves into denial. He can't handle the reality of his leader being led away and the brutality that is being imposed on Jesus, an innocent man. So he moves in denial, and it's reflected in denying even being affiliated with Jesus. So there's something more going on than just denying that he knows Jesus. This man is struggling emotionally, and his body is telling him how to defend off what's happening. Sometimes Peter gets a bad rap, because he's so tenacious and he's always willing to stand up, and he's like the most vocal disciple that we read about in the Bible. But he was also human. And the overcoming aspect of Peter is he's going to learn from this experience. Because later on, Jesus is going to ask, after he rises from the dead, they spend some time to each other. You go forward in the story, they're sitting next to the water. Jesus makes the disciples breakfast, and he asks them three times, "You're going to take care of my sheep." Amending and reaffirming to Peter, "You are human. I called this. I knew it was coming because I know you so well. And it's okay. What are you going to learn from it and how you're going to move forward?" And the dude establishes the church and becomes known to around the world as spreading who Jesus Christ is. The disciples deserted Jesus and fled. They went all over the place. Could you imagine standing next to your mentor, the person that you know is Jesus the Messiah? And Jesus even goes back and he tells these guys, before I have been raised from the dead, I will go ahead of you to Galilee and meet you there. They know what they know. Jesus wasn't talking in a parable at all. You did not need to decipher that code at all. I'm going to die. I'm going to raise from the dead. I'll see you in Galilee. But that emotion, could you imagine being there in the Garden of Gethsemane and a bunch of soldiers come and they've got swords and different armor on and they've got people yelling and very angry. Could you imagine what that might feel like and how they reacted? But I'll tell you what I know about these disciples, and one of my favorite is Doubting Thomas. And he gets a bad rap too. Thomas fled. Thomas had to feel the wounds in Jesus' side, the holes in his hands. But that guy went the farthest than any other disciple, making it to around what we now know as India. He went the farthest. Talk about overcoming and learning. I bet there's a lot of times on that journey that he wanted to flee, and a lot of things that he was called to do that he overcame anyway. Pilate, man, he's in a tough spot, right? We don't even know if he really believes that Jesus was Messiah. I kind of have an inkling that he was kind of getting it throughout this trial. He's projecting his accountability on the crowd and washes his hands of the situation. And there is something about washing hands, there's a little psychology, and it's kind of fun to look up, that when you get goo on you and you're like, oh, I just got to wash my hands, or you get dirty and you've had a bad day. You ever had a bad day and you're like, I just need a shower? And you shower and you get revived and you get that second wind to go through the rest of the day. It's like that physical manifestation. It's kind of why we do physical communion, to remind us of you. Like, you have to do physical stuff because we're physical beings, right? So he literally washes his hands to make himself feel better that I'm not accountable for Jesus' death. Although he was the leader, right? But the riots are starting. And he had a very difficult job because the Romans took over this area. But the Jewish people are they're the main population. And so you had to, like, we're taking over you, but they knew that the Jewish people could rise because there's so many, right? So he's had this balance. So he's trying to figure this out. Do it well, not do it well. His humanness came through. And he just washed his hands of it. It was like, do what you want to do. Maybe it helped him sleep at night. Maybe it didn't. I would say that kind of haunted him. But that was his attempt. So my question is, are these unreasonable reactions given the danger and the pressure on all of these people? I would say no, from a reactive state. But what about from a proactive state? Meaning, what if we as Christians actively prepared for adversity? So when we are in the moment, our bodies will do what they do, but could we then take a moment to determine how we will react? There is a moment when someone calls you a name that you can control. We're going to go very elementary. That you can control saying, well, I'm rubber and you're glue, and everything you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. There's a moment in there where you have a decision point where you can react and you can let that defense mechanism come through, or you can control it and not say that and instead show compassion and mercy by ignoring the comment, or if you're called to, confronting the deeper issue, depending on the situation, on why they called you that name or said that nasty thing to you in the first place. We are reactive. It's just how our bodies are created, and it's how we have lived and evolved for so many years. But we do have some control of that. We can take a moment and say, is this something that I should fight or flee from? When we do the defense mechanisms of fight or flight and they become a pattern or we get stuck in them and turn from God, what do you feel? Lonely, maybe? Abandoned or forgotten by God? We need to remember that life happens. Circumstances aren't always great, but nothing changed on God and Jesus' part. They are there. All this occurred with the disciples, and he had plainly told them, I got to say this again, he had plainly told them that he would rise and meet them in Galilee. And we're going to go back to chapter 26 and read 36 through 46. This is when Jesus is praying in the garden. Because these are the nuggets. How did Jesus deal with this? Let's put ourselves in Jesus' shoes. Jesus knows God's plan. Jesus knows he's going to get arrested. He's going to get berated by words, fists, and other things. And he knows he's going to have to make that long walk with the cross to the place that he'll be crucified. You don't have to raise your hands, but I kind of question, would I stay and fight like Jesus did? Or would I give in to the flight? Be like, God, you know, maybe there's another person that can do this. Because Jesus was fully human at this time too. So it's not that these things, these defense mechanisms weren't occurring in Jesus. So let's see how Jesus dealt with it and did what he needed to do anyway. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane. And he said, sit here while I go over there to pray. He took Peter and Zebedee's two sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed, human emotions. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. He went on a little farther and bowed with his face to the ground, praying, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken from me, yet I want your will to be done, not mine. Then he returned to the disciples and found them asleep. He said to Peter, couldn't you watch with me even 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Then Jesus left a second time and prayed, my Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done. When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open. So he went to pray a third time, saying the same thing again. Then he came to the disciples and said, go ahead and sleep. Have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Up, let's be going. Look, my betrayer is here. Again, Jesus was fully human during this time. He even lets us know his emotions that he's feeling. He's distressed. He's anguished. My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. That's a huge statement. Keep watch and pray so that you will not give in to temptation. For the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. So keep watch and pray. Those are our takeaways. And when you look up watch, it's being diligent like a night guard. Learning your weaknesses, fears, strengths, and hopes. So one thing that I took from my military experience is when you have a lookout point, there's certain aspects that you want to take advantage of in your lookout point, whatever your purview is that you're guarding. And they even have little maps that they like teach us how to draw, and you have to like mark what's your weak points, where could I be ambushed, where could potentially the enemy come through, where's our strong points that would be difficult for somebody to come through. Which things on the horizon, like looking beyond like what's right in front of you, which things on the horizon are there? And from day to day, are they changing? Because it could be indications of the enemy there. During the day, you write all this out, and you're like, oh, I got this. Then it turns nighttime. Anybody's vision change a little bit in the night? Things look a little bit different. Shadows are a little bit creepy, and they like skew things a little bit. So when we're talking about this and why when you look like what watches in the Bible, and they talk about night guard, you have to be extra diligent. You're tired. Things look a little bit different than they did during the day. You can't see as far. So you have to be extra attentive during a time where you're probably not that attentive. Spiritually speaking, we need to be watching, learning, what's my strengths, what's my weaknesses, and we need to be accepting. That's the accepting part. Weaknesses aren't bad, they're just what they are. When you're aware of them, then you know to more call on Jesus when you're called to use one of those places that you're weaker, because then Jesus strengthens that and Jesus gets the glory. Paul talks about that. Second, go to God praying continuously, strengthening your connection, obtaining counsel, growing your faith. This isn't the only time in the garden where Jesus prays. Jesus is constantly going off and praying. He's constantly spending that time with Jesus. Again and again and again and again through the Gospels. He goes and he prays. It strengthens us. It takes a moment for us to be more proactive instead of reactive in our lives when we have that connection with God. And three, know the scriptures to strengthen you in a moment as Jesus did. Jesus often quoted scriptures. He's telling Peter why he's going to deny, what's going to happen. Tonight, all of you will desert me, for the scriptures say, God will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. Know the scriptures. Spend time in your Bible. There's one verse that really helps me when I'm feeling inadequate. It's Philippians 4:13. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Part of our acceptance is understanding that we're human and accepting that we have weak spots and accepting that we are built a certain way and that our brains just function a certain way. When we start accepting those things, then you can start dealing with those things, and then you can start overcoming obstacles in your life. You don't need to carry the weight and live. You don't need to carry this weight in this life. However, you do need to deal with stuff. And that's difficult. You need to accept life, accept your humanness, give yourself a break so you can move into overcoming through Jesus Christ. That's a difficult one, right? Giving yourself a break. Our society tells you got to be independent. You got to win. It's tough. But we can accept where we are and we can overcome it. I absolutely believe that. So today's lesson and what we're going to do, here's our homework. We're going to keep watch like a night guard. We're going to pray continuously. We're going to know the scriptures. And we're going to go to God again and again and again, however many times it takes. It's a journey. That's part of giving yourself a break, too. And this is a side note. It's a journey. It's a learning opportunity. Every single day. And you're not just going to flip a switch and then all of a sudden everything is going to be great. You're going to go through stages. So cut yourself a break. Give yourself compassion and forgiveness. Pay attention. Learn yourself. Learn God. Lay it at Jesus' feet. Jesus will have you every single time.